Tonight, I chose a topic. I know I've been a bit focused on specific topics as opposed to the Parsha. Those that are interested in Parsha are welcome to stay up with me whenever I'm done with my various chavrusas. Those that have been here Thursday nights, I try to get to just about everybody before leaving, share a little Torah. Tonight, I want to focus on Shana Bet. And this is applicable if you are coming Shana Bet, if you are not coming Shana Bet. I believe the points I am going to address are relevant to every single person here. I would like to point out and start off with the four categories of people that I think Shana Bet is for. There is one person for whom it is not, and that is someone who is eager to end his Shana Aleph. He's eager to end his Shana Aleph. He's really suffering through it. There was one boy who once gave a Dvar Torah about how Egypt was actually, is just like yeshiva. It was really a lot of suffering, but it was so enriching at the end. We learned so much from it. Like, did you just compare freedom to having your children stuck in a wall? And I really hope that's not comparable, like paid free year of paradise or slave labor, whippings, and okay, but for some people it might be like that. And if for you are suffering through the year, then indeed a second year is not for you. There are four categories for whom it is for, and again, I'm talking to every single person here. Even if your parents said you can't come back, and we do not believe in pinning students against parents. I'll say that again. We do not believe in having students run up against parents. However, the messages that I'm about to say, I really, truly believe is relevant to every single person, no matter where you are. Number one, the first category is a boy who realizes at some point between the beginning of the year and the day he leaves, or the day before Shana Bet begins, that maybe I did not get all that much out of Shana Aleph. You know, second year I'll probably settle down a little more and I'll actually get something out of it. That's one boy for whom Shana Bet can be very helpful. Another boy is the boy who says, I got a lot, but the truth is, I'm not going to stand up to all the temptations back at home, back in universities. I'll be finished. I should probably strengthen myself. Category number three, the boy who grew a lot, and he probably will not fall in temptation so much, but he will not continue to learn. He will not continue to push forward and progress from where he is now. And category number four, which I think is the most downplayed but most critical, is that you may have participated. You may even continue on the path of learning and davening when you get back. But it could be, won't be, a Talmud Chacham. And Rav Soloveitchik taught the world something tremendous, that he took Rav Hirsch's idea of Torah Mada and raised it one level. And that is, not only is there a concept called Torah and Mada that you could be involved in both, but it could actually be a Talmud Chacham. There's nothing wrong with it, and it's something to be encouraged, and it's plausible. His Talmidim became Talmidei Chacham. You could be a massive Talmud Chacham. You don't have to be a Rebbe. You could do whatever you want. You could be a computer specialist. You can be a doctor. You can be a plumber. You could do whatever you want. You could also be a massive Talmud Chacham. Every single person. And those are the four people that I think, the four categories for whom Shana Bet could really be of help. I find every year, you could speak to Shana Bet guys, that the first week of Shana Bet happens to create more growth than the entirety of all of Shana Aleph. I don't know how. I'm going to give a few possibilities. But we have to address a little bit of history. Basically, if a boy was not learning so well, the Torah just isn't going in, I can't learn a Gemara. I can't learn a Rashi and Tosfos. All of a sudden, somehow, I don't know how it happens. Now he can learn a Gemara. I can't daven with focus. I just can't do it. All of a sudden, he could daven with focus. It just happens. It's a really remarkable thing. Unclear why that works. You learn a whole year. You get your feet wet. Take a break for a summer. This is true for the guys that learn during the summer. Don't learn during the summer. They come back after that break, that psychological break, and now, all of a sudden, bam. They could focus. They could learn. It's really tremendous. It's really bewildering. I'd like to suggest a possibility as to why this is. There's something called Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh means sacrifice. And there's been concepts of sacrifice in the world. Listen to this Medrash. There's a Medrash in Gemara Pesachim that tells us, Ve'emes Hashem li'olam halaluka. Gemara Pesachim Daf Nun Tes tells us, Hashem is emes. Who said this? The Gemara says, Gavriel the Malach, an angel, said this. And why? When Avram Avinu was thrown into the fire by Nimrod and the people running Ur-Kasdim, Avram was put in the fire, in the furnace, and Gavriel said, let me go save him. Hashem says, Gavriel, no, I don't want you to save him. I think I should really be the one to do this. So Hashem goes and saves Avram Avinu, and then Hashem rewards Gavriel, but you wanted to do something great. I don't want to take that away from you. I will provide another opportunity in history for you to come along and save someone from a fire. And the story goes, the Gemara concludes, there are three giants, little children, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, that they told Nebuchadnezzar, we are not bound to idols. He said, you better, or you'll be thrown into the fiery furnace. They said, little children, we are not bowing to your idols. He threw them into the furnace, and they were saved miraculously with Daniel. How? I don't know. Comes the Gemara and says, Gavriel, who wanted to save Avram Avinu from the fire, saved Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And then Gavriel responds, concludes the Gemara. The emes Hashem li'olam haleluka. Hashem is emes. He told me he was going to give me an opportunity, and he just did. Unbelievable. Rav Eliyosve was one of the super giants in America. And he said, I think in Lakewood, and he said the following vart. Why is it that Gavriel needed to wait till he had that opportunity to exclaim and proclaim God is emes, God is truthful? He knew that we're talking about an angel. He knew that God would provide him an opportunity to do this great act of saving someone if God said he would. And Rav Eliyosve said, Avram Avinu was Moser Nefesh, sacrificed for Hashem's name. And he wasn't sure that there would actually be Yidden, there would be Jews that were ready to sacrifice for Hashem the way Avram Avinu was. The emes Hashem li'olam. I knew Hashem would provide an opportunity if an opportunity was there. But I didn't know if Jews, after Avram Avinu's time, would actually be willing to sacrifice. And I saw Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, these children that were ready to sacrifice. Emes Hashem li'olam haleluka. This idea of sacrifice is really so important. Because sometimes we forget the concept, and it's difficult. There was a chassid that went to the Friedrich Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the first Rebbe, and he said, Rebbe, in America, and today, like, where? How do you sacrifice? I remember back in the day, sacrifice meant you may not have a pair of shoes, you may have ripped clothes, and you still learn, and you still keep Hashem's Torah and mitzvos. Someone in one of the camps in Auschwitz wrote on the wall that im kol zeh, with all this, lo nishkach, lo nishkachucha, something like that, we will not forget you. They wrote it in Hebrew. They engraved it in the wall. We're still never going to forget you. That's sacrifice. That's wild. So he said to the Rebbe, in America, what do I do to sacrifice for you? I'll drink one less cup of orange juice of Tropicana. How do you do sacrifice? And the Rebbe said, yeah, that's a good question. How do you do sacrifice? I don't know. So listen to this. There was the Rizhner, and the Rizhner Rebbe had a student. One of his top students was not the Sachet Shaver. I keep getting that confused. The Rizhner's Talmud was a great the Tzanzer, the Tzanz Rebbe, was a Talmud of the Rizhner. And the Tzanz Rebbe, he was a giant in his own right, and he used to make a pilgrimage and spent a lot of time and effort in order to visit the Rizhner. And one of his chassidim, the Tzanz Rebbe's kids, the followers, said, Rebbe, why do you do this? Why do you go out of your way just to go see the Rizhner? You're a Rebbe yourself. And the Tzanz Rebbe said back, do you know that the Beit HaMikdash is not built on Har Sinai, but it's built on Har Abayit? Har Sinai is where we got the Torah. Har Abayit is the place where Avram Avinu brought Yitzchak on the Akedah. He said, you know why? Because sacrifice is more important than the Torah. You need to be ready to sacrifice for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to be ready to go out of your way. And I think that might be in a certain little way, or maybe even a big way, the concept of a Shana Bet. A Shana Bet is, I know I'm expected to be here Shana Aleph. It's cool. My friends do it. Socially, it's accepted. I get credit even in a number of the universities. A person goes out of his way and he says, I'm going to go a second year. I'm going to push. I'm going to be Moser Nefesh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays commensurately for that. I had a boy who went with me every single Friday morning. The first year of Leva Torah, he went with me every single Friday morning to the Kotel. Then I was better at it. I went actually every single Friday morning. And I told him right before he left, I said, he was a boy that I think was, it wasn't so clear, he was going to a very secular university where there were no other Orthodox Jews, none other. Then he was going to be the only one. And he himself, it wasn't clear, was he really committed, was he not committed? And I told him, you came with me every single Friday morning, the Kotel's going to save you. The Kotel's going to be there for you and watch your back. And let's recall the story about Lazar Greenstein. Lazar Greenstein is a Jew from Har Nof. At 60-some years old, he went to the eye doctor who informed him that he's got a pretty serious disease and he needs eye surgery immediately. And 99% chances he's going to be blind by the end of the surgery, but at least he'll live. Reb Lazar Greenstein, he asked the doctor, what's the latest I could push this surgery off, but yet I'm still safe? The doctor said, Lazar, it really isn't much time. Give me some amount of time. Don't say tomorrow. Give me some. How much time can I buy? I need some time. So they came up with 3 weeks. Lazar Greenstein had 3 weeks before he goes for the surgery. And 99% chances he's going to be blind when he wakes up. Rav Lazer Greenstein reviewed Maseches Beitza nonstop, slept an absolute minimum, and reviewed it over and over and over again, nonstop, during those 3 weeks. Because that way, he said, when I'm blind, I'll be able to do chazara. That's Mesiras Nefesh. You can't imagine the tears rolling down his face, the tears of joy when he woke up and he was actually able to see and knew Maseches Beitza by heart. That's Mesiras Nefesh. And let's recall Rabbi Larry Pinzauer. Rabbi Larry Pinzauer from Ramat Beit Shemesh. Rabbi Natan Slifkin's mother-in-law, unfortunately, very tragically died this past year. His mother-in-law and his father-in-law were in a terrible, terrible car accident. They had a new car. Driving in the left lane in L.A., a very fast highway. And in the middle of the, it was a night time when they were driving at night. And all of a sudden, there was an electric failure in the car. They were in the left lane and it stopped suddenly in the left lane. An extraordinarily fast moving highway. Black. No, the emergency lights didn't work. It was black. No one could see them. And he turned around and he saw vehicles coming right at them in the left lane from behind and just swerving out of the way. And Mr. Samson, Natan's father-in-law, he picked up his wife's hand, his childhood best friend, who he loved for so many years. He said, let's say Shema. I don't think we're going to make it. And as they finished Shema, a van plowed right into them. She indeed did not make it. He woke up in the hospital a day later. And listen to what took place. That took place on Thursday night in L.A. We're 10 hours later, Friday morning here. The Slifkins and his brother-in-law, the Rosensteins, immediately posted this mail, an email to the whole Ramat Beit Shemesh. My mother-in-law is in a coma. My father-in-law is injured badly. Please daven. Their lives are on the line. That email went into Shabbos. No one knew what else. No other information was given. A guy that lives near them, not close friends, Rabbi Larry Pinzauer, he decided, you know, I heard once that if you daven, say all of Tehillim throughout Shabbos three times through on Shabbos, it's a tremendous segula for healing people. I'm going to do that. I've never done it before. And he said to himself, I'm going to take that upon myself for the sake of these people. He barely knows them. He decided, he saw the email, I'm going to do something. Rabbi Larry Pinzauer went ahead and after the meal Friday night, he went through his first round of Sefer Tehillim, finished at 2 in the morning, and went to sleep. He woke up for Vatikin, and then, right after Vatikin, started his second round of Tehillim. He started to fall asleep. He was getting tired. And so right after lunch, he took a little nap until lunch. Right after lunch, he finished the second round of Sefer Tehillim. And then, starting about 2 hours before Mincha, about an hour after a nap, he then started his third round. Went through Shalashuddas and finished right before Maariv, his third round of saying Sefer Tehillim. He went and called up the Rosensteins and Slifkins right after Shabbos. And he said, I just want you guys to know, I had your parents in mind all Shabbos, and this is what I did. And he gave them a long description, blow by blow, and I started falling asleep. And so I stood up. So I went outside, and I started walking around with the Tehillim. And blow by blow, minute by minute, he explained to them the Mesiras Nefesh that he did just to give them the chizuk, that strength. You should know people care, and people are doing something. Turns out that she passed away, and Matzei Shabbos here in Israel, we found out she passed away. The burial took place, and then Shiva. I went to pay a Shiva call the same time that Rabbi Larry Pinzauer went to pay a Shiva call. And that's how I heard this story of what happened. And they were all thanking him. It meant so much. What chizuk you gave us. And right then and there, Natan Slifkin's niece, Ari Rosenstein's daughter, says, Rabbi Pinzauer, what time did you stop your Tehillim? And he goes through, he's like, it was at Shkia, like right before Mariv. I stopped my third. Daddy, she turns to her father. What time did Safta pass away? Turns out she passed away right after Mariv here, Shabbos morning there in L.A. When he finishes Tehillim, she stayed alive the entirety of Shabbos here. And understand the power of that. The father wanted one thing desperately, to be able to say goodbye to her before she was gone. But he himself was injured so badly, they refused to let him out of his bed. He could barely walk. He could barely stay balanced. And they said, Mr. Sampson, we cannot let you out of your bed. And he begged them, you have to take me to see my wife before she's gone. And they finally let him out Shabbos morning, an hour before she passed away. Because of Rabbi Larry Pinzauer, Mr. Sampson, Rabbi Slifkin's father-in-law, got to say goodbye to his wife. That's called Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh is, I'm going to go out of my way. I think a lot of people here, if it was the Holocaust, the Hananiah Mishael V'Azariah case, when you see the oppression in front of your eyes, I think a lot of people here might actually choose, I'm in at all cost. I'm ready to sacrifice. I think a lot of people here would make that decision. But then in the times of freedom, at times, we forget. And little tummy noises, wait a minute, I haven't had a Max cake in about 15 minutes. It growled. That pushes it. We forget. We forget Mesiras Nefesh. We forget that sacrifice. And I'll tell you the sacrifice that I'm talking about. Gemara and Chumash and all of learning is actually frustrating at times. I'm familiar with it. It sometimes is actually difficult. Some of us have actually gone ahead and said, you know, today I'm inspired. I'm going to learn seriously today. And you open up that sefer and you encounter that all too familiar feeling. Rats! It's still frustrating! I'm inspired today! Don't be so difficult! And you're still not Rabbi Akiva Eiger at the end of the day. And you figured, today I'm inspired. I bet I could get through a Masechta in the week. By the end of this week, I could do 7 blot a day. I could do like Rav Shammai. I can do this! And you're inspired! And then you open it. Rats! Why does it have to be so difficult? And every word, I have to write it down, and I have to look it up in a dictionary, and every line is frustrating. Mesiras Nefesh, let's not forget. Beis HaMikdash is on the place of the Akedah, of Mesiras Nefesh, of the place of sacrifice. In the event that you are back in America, in Canada, in Australia, I don't care where you are in the world, that's for Sally. I miss him already. Wherever you are, listen to this. There's a Pirkei Avos that tells us, Aseh lecha rav uknei lecha chaver. Make for yourself a rabbi and buy yourself a chaver. Buy, kinei, kinyan. Buy yourself a chaver. Aseh lecha rav, make. You don't have to buy a rabbi. Once you have a rabbi forever and ever. But a chaver, someone who's going to learn with you b'chavrusa, you have to be ready to pay money. I could tell you, I had a chavrusa for 10 years. Gas money in Eretz Yisrael is expensive. For me to get to my chavrusa and back, I added it up 1 year, how much I had to pay. Let's leave it at, it was a lot of money. How much I've been paying to learn Torah. Uknei lecha chaver. It's worth every penny. It's Mesiras Nefesh. It's called sacrifice for Torah. I was in a kollel in Yerushalayim. The year we were setting up the yeshiva, I was in a kollel in Yerushalayim. And there was a kollel here that I was invited to join. And I was ready to leave the one in Yerushalayim. I was looking for something else because they learned in a style that was so vastly different to anything I was familiar with. I did not like it. I didn't enjoy it. So I was looking for an alternative. Let me find a different kind of kollel. And I was invited to join a kollel here. I needed something. It was in the afternoons. I was free during the year we were setting up the yeshiva. And as I was about to make that switch, I realized one thing. The kollel in Yerushalayim, which was out of the way, a pain in the neck to travel back and to and fro. It was so annoying. I got home late. Learning style. I didn't like it. My chavrusa there. Didn't like him all that much. They set me up with a big Rosh Yeshiva's son. Yeah, but he was the biggest batlan on the planet. I couldn't learn with him. He kept wasting time. And it turns out, I asked the Rosh Yeshiva of the kollel here, one question. Do you guys have tests? He said, no. I said, I'm afraid I'm going to have to stay in Yerushalayim. He said, we don't have tests. You have to stay. He said, yeah, they have 2 tests a week. And I know because I'm so busy, I will justify every reason why not to review and why not to learn seriously. And because they have exams every week, that's why I'm going to stay in Yerushalayim. It's called sacrifice. If you sacrifice, it's you. It's a piece of you and it stays with you. Every letter, so it's painful, it's difficult. If you say, I'm in for the sacrifice, this is my guarantee. At the point where you're ready to sacrifice for it and say, I'm willing to put in the effort, I'm willing to sacrifice, I'm willing to be frustrated, and I don't care. I recognize how important it is for my life, and I'm ready to sacrifice. I'm ready to sit there. I'm ready not to go get up for another soda and another drink every single minute. I'm ready to sit and just plug away as much as I can. I can tell you, you will love it. That is a guarantee. So, we reviewed a number of aspects of Mesiras Nefesh and such an important message about the future. And I will conclude with the examples of Kenei Lecha Chaver. Purchasing for yourself a Chaver. At all cost. Wherever you are, you need a Chavrusa. When you go back for the summer, you need a Chavrusa. There are some guys here that can't learn all day, that can't learn 4 hours a day. But you know what? I bet every single person here, I am willing to bet every single person here can learn a half hour a day. Maybe not by yourself. Maybe not with another colleague on your level. But I bet if you pay someone, No one pays for an all-you-can-eat and doesn't eat all they can eat. Pay with your money, not your parents' money, with your money, a chavrusa, you will show up. Pay a chavrusa, and you will show up. That's k'nei l'cha chaver. At whatever cost it is, buy. If it costs money, pay for it. And I'll conclude with the story about this exact idea of k'nei l'cha chaver. A Talmud from this yeshiva, he called in New York, and he called in to Z100. And he was the 100th caller. And they asked him, can you name this song? And they play a little piece of a song, and he named the song, and he won 2 free tickets to the New Year's Fish concert. He made a deal with his dad, I will go to the fish concert, and I will go to yeshiva. No fish concert, no yeshiva. Dad, I will go if I can come home for that New Year's concert. Father was desperate, maybe his son will learn something, will gain something. Deal is on. He started to grow November, a little bit. Grew a little bit more in December, but the New Year's concert was right there on his mind. And he was out. And December 22nd, 23rd, he left, flew out. And after the New Year's concert, he was high still. And he flew back. And he came to pack his bags and say goodbye to the yeshiva. That was the impact of the wonderful New Year's fish concert. He came back and said, I'm done. And he left yeshiva and decided, I'm no longer Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Kashrus, I'm finished with all of Torah and Mitzvos. It's a little bit impacting. I decided, I'm not done. We had a lot of great times together. And I don't invest short term. He did bring me to the New Year's concert on computer. He recorded the whole thing. And at my dining room table, he showed me a New Year's fish concert. All I could say is there was a lot of smoke. There was a lot of talent, but a lot of smoke. And after about 4 years, I set him up with a chavrusa to learn once a week with a certain individual in New York. But a half a year later, he turns to his dad and says, Dad, do you know that this is a Jewish company in Manhattan? And are you aware that there are Jews working in this Jewish company? And if any of them would like to learn during, let's say, a tea break, a coffee break, during lunch break, they don't have an opportunity because there's no Sfarim, there's no Beis Medrash in this Jewish company. I think there should be a guy that's not Shomer Shabbos, not Shomer Kashrus, and just started learning once a week. You know what happened? This boy, if we project a number of years later, Baruch Hashem, he got married 2 years ago. He has a very cute child, and he learns every single day. He sends me his questions. I learn with him b'chavrusa every week, and he is fully Shomer Torah and Mitzvot. Rabosai, everyone can learn a little bit. Some people can learn a lot. But you need Mesiras Nefesh to continue growing because it's our heritage. It's ours. Let's make it ours. Let's acquire it forever.